So getting into our subject matter tonight, Kate Rhodes is talking about family systems and partnering with parents, which is huge, right? Because engaged students beget engaged parents, as well as, and that works in reverse too, engaged parents beget engaged students. So this is a hyper important topic, stuff you can really use. And Kate Rhodes, the birthday girl.
Awesome. Yeah, so for my birthday, Travis asked me to speak to y'all. And just like you said, we are going to talk about family systems and partnering with parents. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on this. I am currently in grad school at Richmond for mental health counseling and marriage and family therapy. But family systems, coming into the program was something that I was really excited to learn more about, and that has certainly only been solidified being in school there and working with youth and families here. It comes up on a daily basis, seeing this played out, the things that we are learning there. So I want to give you a little bit more context to what this means, working with family systems, and then we're going to talk about what that means for you. So how can you help your students and your discipleship groups on a daily basis? Well, because just like Travis said, when we serve students, we're actually serving the entire family. And when we are serving families, we're serving the students. It goes both ways. Every individual within a family unit affects the family as a whole. And so if you'll go to the first slide, Mark. As student ministry leaders, we aren't just serving students, we are serving the whole family. So to understand the students in your discipleship group better and serve them better, you need to be aware of their family system. And this is completely in line with what Perimeter's vision is for our church. The vision statement for Perimeter is to make and deploy mature and equipped followers of Christ for the sake of family, community, and global transformation. So you, everyone in this room, is essential to accomplishing the mission of Perimeter, because you are one of the greatest, have one of the greatest impacts on these students' lives. Students have an impact on their families' lives. Families have an impact on community, the community at large, and the community at large has an impact on the world. So it starts here in the way in which you are connecting with the students in your discipleship groups. That's a huge influence when you really think about that. And so we're going to just talk about, sorry, we do not have a podium, so I'm going to do the best I can. What does this have to do with you as a leader? You impact students who impact their families, who impact their communities, who impact the world. One of the books that we read in one of my classes was by Larry Crabb, who is a Christian psychiatrist. And he talks a lot about how connecting with others and being in community is so essential to our emotional health and well-being. And he said this: the root of all our personal and emotional difficulties is a lack of togetherness. I therefore believe that the surest route to overcoming problems and becoming the people we are meant to be is reconnecting with God and with our community. And so, particularly with the generation that we are working with, who are more disconnected than any generation before. It seems like they're very connected through social media, through technology and whatnot. But about a year ago, so I started here at Perimeter about a year ago, and one of the first things we did when I joined staff was we went to a conference that was put on by the Barna Group, who did a lot of research, extensive research on Gen Z. And one of the things that, I mean, just stuck with me so much is that this generation, anyone born after 1995, has no memory of what it was like to live without the internet or social media. And so they don't even have, so for me, I was in middle school when Y2K happened, and kind of was a part of watching all of that progress. But I still can kind of draw on this memory of solitude, and I can draw on this memory of connectedness with my family. But these students cannot. They've never experienced that. And so as leaders, being able to connect with students in a meaningful way in that 1 hour of discipleship is huge. And this isn't only affecting students, though it is, and we still don't probably know all the implications on what that's doing to their mental and emotional health, but it's also affecting the way that parents parent. And so that connectedness in that 1 hour is huge in impacting that student, but also impacting the way in which they relate to their families. And as much as I love that statement, I do also know that there is more complexity than just being in a relationship for our emotional health. But so much of it does come down to that. So what does this have to do with family systems? Family systems theory, to kind of give you a clinical definition of what this looks like, is the belief that psychological and relational problems arise from within one's family system. Symptoms in an individual are said to be an expression of dysfunction within the family system. So basically what this is saying is, if you have a student who is struggling with anxiety, struggling with depression, struggling with an addiction, with an eating disorder, anything like that, any pathological issue, then we so often, I mean, I meet with parents quite often who come to me saying, will you help my child? And counselors will do the same thing. Well, what family systems theory says is that when a child is an identified patient, it really is just a symptom of a dysfunction within the family as a whole. And so that's coming out within the child. Again, there are, and we're going to look at this chart to kind of see what this means of there's more complexity to it. But what this means is that when the family is served, that's going to bring healing to the child. And when the child is served, that's also going to bring healing to the family as a whole. And so that's kind of where you come in to really love and serve these students well. And I'll just kind of give an example and get a little bit vulnerable with my own story of why I'm so passionate about this and mental health, and particularly within the church. When I was a junior in high school. Thank you, Davon. Woo! When I was a junior in high school, I started to develop, well, multiple symptoms of depression and anxiety, which led into a full-blown eating disorder. And my parents really... My junior year was kind of like under the radar and very manageable, kind of gone along with my daily life. And then by my senior year, it became debilitating, where I could not really function in school, really withdrew from my friends and had to seek professional help. And there were a lot of changes that were going on with my family at that time. There had always been conflict between my parents, who are still together. I love them very much, but they would admit all of these things to you. But there was a lot of conflict in their relationship. My dad was very avoidant. My mom was very aggressive and assertive. And my mom started working for the first time in my life, my senior year. My grandmother passed away. My sister got engaged, moved back in. My best friend, who was my sister, who was a year ahead of me, moved out. So there was just a lot of chaos within the family. And so this really, but I even remember the way that I felt as a 16, 17-year-old of being like, I am the problem. And going from counselor to counselor to psychiatrist, and I was trying to be fixed. And there were certainly things that needed to be addressed within me, for sure. And I dealt, it's a continual process. It's not something that 100% ever goes away in terms of our mental and emotional health. But I remember just feeling like I was the identified patient. And really what needed to be going on was that my whole family was addressed and I was one part of it. And so that's how we need to think about when we are dealing with our students, is that they are a part of a family unit, and there needs to be healing within that family as a whole. And when we put that pressure on a child who is already struggling with all of these other just pressures of family conflict and conflict at school, we haven't even talked about friendships that they're a part of, school systems that are a part of. And when we put that even more pressure on them to get better, we have to think about the system in which they are part of and the pressures that are coming on a daily basis, and particularly within their family. And like I said, this goes both ways. Because when I began to get really sick, then my mom, she was even more stressed. There was more anxiety. So I was also affecting my family. And causing more anxiety within the family system. So it goes both way. Both need to be addressed. And as Christians, I mean, we do have hope, and we know that we are all individually born with a sinful disposition. However, we are susceptible to generational sin, which is closely related to these ideas within family systems theory. So I've been going through emotionally healthy spirituality with the girl residents on our team, which has been really awesome, and I highly recommend this book. And I was laughing with them because I was like, so much of this really is directly related to what we're learning about within family systems. And I loved this because I was like, wow, I never knew that this whole concept, this whole idea, and just to give a little bit of background information, so another concept within this is and I'm going to have y'all do just a little mini reflective exercise in a second, is that with this comes, there's multi-generational family systems. So there are things that we pass on from generation to generation to generation that are never addressed if we don't reflect on it and bring about healing within individuals and families. It will continue on. And so that's why self-awareness, though that might be kind of a buzzword, is so important. To recognize these things and not be overwhelmed by them, because guys, we have the gospel to address those issues and to address those things, and we are not without hope. But because we have the gospel, let's address them and bring hope to the next generation. So it really blew my mind when we were reading this, and I was like, oh, this is like in the Bible, you know, like these patterns are in the Bible. So it talks about between Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that a pattern of lying in each generation. Abraham lied twice about Sarah. Isaac and Rebekah's marriage was characterized by lies. Jacob lied to almost everyone. His name means deceiver. 10 of Jacob's children lied about Joseph's death, faking a funeral and keeping a family secret for more than 10 years. Then there was favoritism. There were brothers experiencing a cutoff from one another in each generation. Poor intimacy in the marriages of each generation. So you just see these patterns. And yet God's saying, guys, like, let's stop this. I've brought the hope for your family. I have brought healing so that you no longer have to carry down these patterns from generation to generation. And there's so much hope in that. Let's go to the reflection exercise. As leaders, one thing that we're taught in at Richmond, and Jenna Hecht, she also is a Richmond grad, so she's probably like, I can teach this better than you can. But one thing that we are taught repeatedly is to be a good counselor, to be a good clinician, we must be very self-aware, and we must be humble enough to recognize the things in our own lives that are sensitive or the things that we struggle with, and not to bring those into the counseling room. And so that doesn't mean that I can't, that the things I've been through, the reason that I want to be a counselor is because of the things I've been through. So I can lead and I can counsel out of a place of compassion and empathy, but that I'm not bringing my junk into the room with these students or with my clients, you know, but I can lead from a place of compassion. I can lead from a place of empathy. But we also have to do the work in ourselves in order to love and serve others well. So I want you all to take a few minutes. If you have a pen, paper, if you don't, you can type on your phone or you can just think. But these are some questions I want you to think about. What are some identified patterns within your own family? How do those patterns reflect in your daily life today? How does your relationship with your parents, or I think I was thinking about students, or how does your relationship with your spouse, your children, affect your relationship with God? How can the gospel bring healing to those areas of my life? So take about 5 minutes to reflect on that, and then we'll keep going. All right, we'll keep going. But I do want y'all to keep kind of thinking about that. That's an ongoing process as you are ministering to your students. And another question that would be really helpful for you to think about in your own life, but then also in the lives of your students, is how does my relationship, and this really does kind of go back to and primarily go back to your parents, but how does my relationship with my parents affect the way in which I relate to God? So we talk a lot about attachment styles also within at Richmond. And, you know, if you've had a certain relationship with your father, then a lot of times that can be easily translated to the way in which you see God and view him. And that's another thing in which we have to, and I'm going to talk about this in a little bit in terms of just kind of practical things that you can do, but we have to reflect the true nature of God to our students and point them to a God who is unconditionally loving and faithful and kind and forgiving and ever-present. And that is our hope, you know, but those are things that, because we do live in a broken world, that we have to continually go to the gospel to really draw from. And also we learn how to do relationships from our parents. That is our initial way in which we learn. But again, we are not without hope in that, because there's not a single person who has parents who did relationships perfectly. So we all need the hope of the gospel. We all do. And also in thinking about just kind of what our students have been through, we talk about mental health a lot with our students. And just this is something to be aware of, because our students respond to circumstances so differently. And this was incredibly helpful for me, this little chart, in understanding your students and where they're coming from. So how many leaders have students who have struggled with depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, self-harm? Yeah. Or have had students who have had that within their family? Almost everybody, right? So this is a little chart to help us understand crises. So I'm going to describe crises as being having a suicidal attempt, having self-harm, seeking an eating disorder to self-soothe, or drugs or alcohol underage to self-soothe. Anything like that that we're using means that you have reached crisis point, you know, that you are looking for something else outside of, it is affecting your daily life and the way in which you are interacting at school and with others. So if you have a student right here who has a genetic disposition towards depression or anxiety of just about this much, so they don't have a huge history of that within their family, it's going to take a lot of stress, to get them to crisis point. But if you have a student over here who has a greater genetic disposition towards that, it's going to take a lot less stress. So by stress, it can be a breakup. It can be stress at school. They didn't make a varsity team. They got injured. They got sick. It's going to take a lot less of that to get to this place of crises. And then if they're at this point, it's going to take essentially no stress to kind of be in that crisis place. So kind of being aware of, and we can't know that. We can't know their makeup unless we are a doctor and a psychiatrist. And even then, there are only so much that tests can do. But that's why it's really helpful to kind of know that each student is going to respond to circumstances differently. And we can't judge them all the same way. Does that make sense? And because I know we get questions. We even talk about this in the office of like kind of baffled over, why is this student struggling so much? And yet we don't know their background. We don't know their genetic disposition. We don't know what their parents have gone through. So that's why it should perk up when you do find out about certain things within their family system. Again, this is not to judge people by any means, but it is being aware so that we are able to serve and love them better. That is what we're trying to do. We're not trying to call them out. We're not trying to judge. We all have this within our families. If we went around the room and heard what was going on in each of your families, I guarantee you there's something that you all have dealt with. So that is just a really helpful little tool to understand and to make you more aware of what's going on in students' lives, because everyone has a different story and they respond differently. So what can we do? What can we do with this information and how can we help? I think one of the greatest things that we can give to a student who is struggling with anxiety, to a student who has crisis within their family, is to be a calm and non-anxious presence. That's all. It's not some magic word. It's not some to have a degree in mental health counseling. That is not what these students need. What they need is a calm and non-anxious presence in their life. Because God, who is all-knowing, and he never freaks out. He asks us to come to him when we are angry, when we are sad, when we are stressed. He wants us to come to him. And so to be able to represent that to a student, to be that consistent person in their lives, is so healing. And it's just what they need. And then help them develop a healthy relationship with God. Gosh, some of our students, they have been through so much that they've got they're at this point. They've got a lot stacked up against them. And so if we can just continually point them to the truth of the gospel and say, hey, there is a God who loves you unconditionally. And there's a community of people who aren't perfect, but they want to love you. And they want to come alongside you in this. So help students develop healthy relationships with others. And then finally, of course, engage with parents. So I'm going to not use names, but I'm going to give an example of we have a student who she has struggled with so much anxiety. And in helping the leader, I said, you know, we can speak truth into this girl's life all day long, but until we start to engage the parents, I don't think we're going to get very far. Apart from the Holy Spirit, who can do that, work a miracle, and bring healing, we have to engage the parents. We cannot do this alone, because we might be saying something to them for an hour on Sunday nights, but we don't know what's going on at home. And even if they're in a safe place, even if they're in a place, it's going to take a team of people to come alongside them and to bring about healing in their lives, because they're spending every other waking hour with people other than us. And so we really want to come alongside parents, and we want to know, it's so helpful. So we ended up meeting with this mom and we're able to hear her history. And it was so enlightening and insightful and helped us understand how to come alongside her in a much more helpful way. Because we've known these students. I mean, some of y'all, if you've been at Perimeter for a long time, you might have seen these students from birth. But most of us have known our students for maybe a year or two. And their parents have a lot more history about how they were raised, what they have been through, than we do. And so to be able to have that context to help us to get to this place of understanding, where is this child at? Where is this student at? What have they been through that has caused them and affected them to get to where they are today? Because I'm judging them based on an hour of knowing them, you know? And so that's, it kind of goes back to the beginning of what we said. We're not just ministering to students. We're ministering to the whole family. And these parents, they're entrusting their children to us. That's a big task. And it is so helpful. And I know that y'all have heard this from other people, but it is so helpful for these students to have someone outside of their family who is a safe place to go to. So when things are, when they are struggling with things within their own family, that you are someone they can come talk to about that. That's huge. So I guess I'm just affirming y'all on that. In the role that you play with these students, keep on keeping on. And invite more people to do it too. Okay, I want y'all to spend like, because it's 7:30, so I need to get you out of here. Spend like 2 minutes discussing the questions on here, and then we'll reconvene. Around your table. I handed out handouts earlier. Okay, I'm sorry to cut y'all off, but for the sake of time, this is good. Y'all are discussing. For the sake of time, we're going to kind of move forward because I want to respect, it's a Sunday night, and some of y'all have President's Day tomorrow and want to get on with your nights. But anyway, I got a good question from this table who was asking, you know, in terms of confidentiality, trying to protect your students, how do we engage parents in that case? And so in some cases, if you recognize a certain type of crisis or dysfunction within the family, either you can always contact us. Contact me or Travis or someone else on Watershed staff. And we want to have shepherding. Yes. Sorry, student ministries. I'm still thinking Watershed, student ministries. And we will get shepherding involved in that situation. But in terms of, we just want you to be available for the parents of your students. So that's like at the beginning of the year when we tell you not just to email your students, but email the parents. Or if you see them at church, just be sure to say hey, to engage them, so that they know here is a leader who is on our team, who is for my child, who is for my family, and this is someone I can come to if things arise. So really just trying to build a relationship. It's not going and saying, hey, Johnny revealed this information to me and is struggling with lust or whatever. You're not like revealing secrets. You're just building relationships. You do want to make sure that discipleship group is a safe place. Did anything else come up in your table discussions that either was insightful or maybe a question came up? I'm going to close this in prayer, but if you have any other questions, feel free to ask me or any other Watershed staff afterwards. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we just acknowledge that we need your wisdom and in order to lead and to love and to serve these students well. We thank you so much that you bring hope and you bring healing in families' lives and students' lives. And I just pray that you would continue to use us in that process and to use us in that story. I pray that you would bring healing to our own lives as we love and serve. And we just pray for our students. We just pray for those who are hurting this week, that you would meet them where they're at, that you would just comfort them. We need you. We love you, and we ask all of this in your son's name. Amen.